broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Refresh Your Wealth. Excited to be here with you. Yours truly, Mark Kohler, co-host with the amazing Matt Sorensen. And excited to be here. I'm talking tax and legal strategies. I mean, it's a little everything, something for everybody, right?
There'll be something for everybody today.
Yeah.
And as you guys know, this show is all about helping you save on taxes, protect your wealth, and we try to be a little bit, we try to entertain you and educate you at the same time as much as you can do with some of these boring topics. But these are the topics that really make a difference in people's lives. Sure, you can listen to, you know, your favorite sports cast or podcast about what's going on in Hollywood, but is that going to help your life? Is that going to save you or make you more money? No. But what we're trying to do is obviously help you save money, save on taxes, and just live the American dream. And today's topic is one that affects 90% of Americans out there. It's in one way or another, your family, student loan debt crisis, and the tax strategies that revolve around that.
Yeah.
And man, is this a big topic right now.
Yeah, this is a crisis, and it's really, really sad. It's funny how things happen in life, because Matt and I this week had two or three different experiences that led up to recording this show. There's an article we're going to talk about here when we get into the main topic about student debt. Students with over $1 million in student debt. This was a front page article in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend. I had a consultation with a client about student debt that was just slapped me across the face, and it was really dramatic for me. And Matt was having a casual conversation with another lawyer that kind of blew his mind on student debt. And So together, all of this, we both just felt really moved to have this conversation. And we hope that many of you listening today can share this episode with maybe a friend or family member that is going into college, currently in college, or now dealing with student debt. Again, a little something for everyone here. And we want to get the tax strategies on the table. What can you do to maybe save on student loan interest, or even take a write-off preparing for school or while you're in school? Yeah, a little something for everybody, man. Come on, right? I mean, this is
absolutely. And I think one of the biggest people that need to know this is the parents of kids who are about to go to college or who are there, because a lot of people make financial commitments for their kids, or they try to help them, or they're sending their kids off, but their kids are, you know, 18, 19 years old when they go. They don't know. They don't understand this, and they need to have parents to help educate them and help make them wise decisions for themselves, for their own student loan debt that they could be ending up with. So it's a big topic, and I know a lot of people are running into this issue. Hopefully you can find our comments today helpful. I think they're going to be, you know, we're going to try and say some smart things today.
Yeah. We always try to say something smart. Whether we get there or not, that's up to you folks. But if you haven't signed up for our newsletter yet, please do get over to refreshyourwealth.com. And we really appreciate your patronage, checking out our show weekly. Hopefully many of you are finding this helpful each week. And we want to be your number one show for legal advice, tax advice, and be a kind of a voice of reason. Now, with that, every week we do a tax and legal tip, something generic. You know, even my amazing co-host today said, Mark, it's got to be off the wall, something that does not relate to student debt. I was like, all right, whatever. He's a slave driver, folks. I mean, it's not easy being, you know, on this show with Matt Sorensen.
Running the program. That's the way we run the program.
He demands excellence.
That's what the producer requires. So I'm just, you know, just following the rules.
Jeez. All right. Well, So I think last week you went first. Do I get to do tax tip this week? Can I?
I mean, I think you're already rolling into it. You're already apologizing for the tax tip you're about to give and blaming me.
That's right.
So why don't you go ahead and get this.
I'm setting you up, folks, for a doozy. All right. Okay. Here we go. Tax tip.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right, on our the topic of taxes, I want to jump into the wonderful world of healthcare. Oh, boy, it just gets all of you, you know, excited just saying the word healthcare. But I had a consultation this week, and it was a fun one. It was actually, it's kind of carried on throughout the week because my paralegals have been working on this entity, and they've been calling me, and the client's pretty excited about it. But it's a unique strategy, which I think some of you might find exciting because it's not just a blase shot in the dark. I want to talk about health savings accounts and how to fund and maximize their value. Now, for those that are new to this, think of a health savings account like a supercharged IRA for healthcare. You get a tax write-off on the way in, no matter what level of income you have. There's no phase out, which is pretty darn cool. The money grows tax-free and comes out tax-free for any medical expense immediately. You don't have to wait till you're 59 and a half, whatever. So I was with a client this week that said, yeah, Mark, we've got a lot of out-of-pocket medical expenses. We're not terribly healthy, or we've got a high deductible plan. It's kind of a crappy plan, so we come out of pocket quite a bit. And I said, well, if it's high deductible, let's get you into a health savings account immediately, take some tax write-offs, and then turn around and pull the money right back out for any out-of-pocket medical you may have even already incurred this year. You know, let's get this thing going. And they were stoked. I mean, that was just cha-ching. I mean, we were laundering money right off the bat. Ooh, I shouldn't say that on the show, laundering, unless I'm doing laundry.
I think the American Association of Laundromats, you know, they're okay with that, actually. They don't want laundering to be a bad thing.
That's right. You know, it's not a dirty word.
Yeah, the AAL, they're okay with this. Keep on using that word in a positive way.
In a positive way. So we want to launder our hard-earned money through a health savings account before we pay for legitimate medical expenses and use a legitimate health savings account and clean that money so you get a tax write-off. Well, that's the beauty of an HSA. Now, where it got taken to a whole new level this week is this client also was funding the HSA to combine it with their 401k from an old job. So they had like $45,000 from a previous job where this $45,000 had accumulated. And it was just kind of floundering there. It wasn't making a big return, and they didn't want to take a lot of risk in the stock market right now, which is at an all-time high. So everybody's a little gun-shy, a little nervous. So $45,000 in a 401k approximately, and $5,000 with a new HSA contribution. Now, I know some of you don't have $5,000 laying around, but for some of you that have it in savings anyway, why not move it into a health savings account, get a write-off, and pay for the medical you're going to pay for anyway. Anyway, so with $45,000 in a 401k, $5,000 in an HSA, we got $50,000 to play with. We created an LLC, and this is where my paralegals are freaking amazing. They're building this LLC that's going to be owned 90-10. See, think about it, $45,000 and $5,000, if you double that to get $100,000, that's 90-10. So it's 90% owned by the 401k.
By the way, Mark got a master's in accounting degree to do those calculations.
Yeah.
Just saying.
I pulled out my calculator.
Very impressive calculations on the fly there.
Yeah. For any of you driving down the road and your brain just exploded, it's pretty easy math. 45. Right. Okay.
Follow along if you can.
Yeah. Follow the bouncing ball. And so 45-5, that's 90-10. Very straightforward. So this LLC is owned 90% by the 401k, 10%. By the HSA. And they're off to the races. They're opening their bank account on Monday of next week. The paralegals are knocking out a new EIN bank packet right now. And this money will be available within the next 10 days, and they can take that $50,000 and invest in what they know best. Now, Matt Sorensen, if you have not heard about this, you can actually self-direct an HSA. Isn't that amazing? You should put a chapter of that in your new book.
That's pretty cool. Well, the second edition of the self.
Speaking of which, did you see how I set that up for you? That was for you, baby.
I mean, you're such a good guy, such a good partner. Just lobbed it out there, you know.
Yeah, take it to the hoop, man. as LeBron James almost did to win the game.
I
last
missed
night.
Everything. I was well, highlights and apparently a heartbreaker for LeBron, but. Yeah. But the Self-Directed IRA Handbook, on a, you know, on a better note, is the second edition was just released. The paperback's out. Ebook will be up short on Kindle. Audiobook following. So for those of you that love this topic Mark's talking about here, self-directing, invest in what you know, with whether it's your IRA, 401k, HSA, Coverdell. We're going to talk about that later today. Those accounts can all be self-directed to invest in what you know, man.
Yeah. So just a little, that was a little shameless plug for my amazing partner, Matt Sorensen. So anyway, the moral of the story is, people, is that my client generated a $5,000 tax write-off on the front page of their return. That's now sitting in an LLC, and 10% of all the profits, whether they're trading Super Bowl tickets or Rod Stewart tickets in Vegas in 2 weeks, they're buying them on StubHub and going to flip them the day before, which would be pretty popular for some of you folks from the 70s and 80s. Yeah. And for those millennials out there, Rod Stewart is a singer, songwriter. He's quite amazing.
Singer, songwriter. Okay.
Yeah, just want to throw that out. But anyway, for those that want to invest in Kentucky racehorses, real estate, cryptocurrency, whatever, 10% of the profits are going to go into your health savings account, which can pay for your orthodontist, your massage envy, your dental healthcare, out-of-pocket copays. Oh, love it. So that's my tax tip of the week. Think outside the box. Fund your HSA. Just put it in the normal bank HSA if you want and have a debit card. That's cool. Or if you can let the money ride, start self-directing, baby. And combine it with your 401k. See, a lot of people say, well, Mark, I don't have enough money in an HSA. $3,000 or $4,000. What the hell can I do with that? Well, you combine it in an LLC with that leftover 401k from that job you hated. Boom. You're in a whole new world. Mm. So.
I like it. Always wise counsel.
Well,
I got a good legal tip. Let me see if I can compete here.
Okay.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
And not that everything's a competition. Most things are between Mark and I. Yes, not everything. Yeah. But
when I'm winning, when I'm winning, they're a competition. When Matt's winning, they're not a competition. It's just
for fun.
Okay.
I had a consult just this past week of a client who went online and made a comment about a business that they did not receive good services from. So they went to their Facebook page and they posted a very negative thing on their Facebook page saying, you know, basically the services they got, kind of outlined their experience. Well, this comment resulted in a letter from the business's lawyer, basically saying, you need to remove the comment. You have committed defamation of our business.
Ooh.
And they basically told him, you need to delete the comment or we're going to pursue further legal action. So this client called, obviously stressed out about, am I really legally responsible for this? And what's the standard? What can I do? I mean, am I, are they right? Can I really be like, you know, they felt like they were getting pushed around, you know?
Man, I'm like, excited to hear this. Keep going, man.
Yeah, they briefly really didn't care about, you know, that much about the comment. They were a little more detached from it, but they were just like a little miffed that they felt like they were getting hardballed, you know?
Yeah, this is good. This is like a little bedtime story. I'm all ears. All right, keep it going.
Yeah, so we had to go through what's the legal standard.
Okay.
Now, the legal standard is if you're ever posting a comment or you're giving a review about a business or you're even talking about a business and telling other people, now, particularly if you are upset, this is where it's always a problem. You're upset, you're pissed off, and you're venting, whether it's online or a review, social media, whatever. Truth is your defense. You have to stick to the facts. Now, here's the problem. This happened in this case, and it happens in others. They get a little loose with the facts, okay? Mm-hmm. And they start explaining the service they got. And if, you know, something really took 5 days, they'll say it took weeks to get this product, you know? And you'll just, you know, when you're mad about something, it's already bad. But, you just kind of, you know, you ham it up a little, you know? You're like, this was really bad.
I don't usually ham things up, so I can't relate, but keep going.
You know, yeah. Well, I'm sure you could understand. Surely you could understand. Yeah. So therein lied the problem for this client was they weren't very factually specific. They went over the top in their, you know, in the facts of what actually happened. Now, your opinions about someone and like, you know, I didn't like the product or the product, you know, didn't meet my expectations, say that all day long. But if you make a factual mistake about something that you know, like that's where you can have an issue when you can't rely on truth as your defense. So in that instance, I told the client, you know what? What do you care? Go delete the comment. Do you really care? Because they did have a factual issue that they basically, it was a, you know, time a product got there. They embellished the time it took when it really didn't take that long. And it was innocent on their part. But that could have caused a problem because what they can do, if they can prove that this person gave untruthful information in their review and that's information they're spreading out to all the world to hear and that comment lost them business, they can sue you for the damages of that lost business. So just stick to the facts. If you're giving negative reviews, folks.
I don't know if I like this. Why didn't they just edit the comment? There's a little pull down menu on your Facebook. You can edit it. Didn't they just go in and like touch it up and go, well, here's the real date. I got it. Or no, I just changed it.
I guess you could have said that, but then you're kind of conceding anyways, right? That's what they were asking for. It's kind of like, just why do you want this in your life? Do you really care in the end? You don't like that they got strong armed though, huh?
No, I don't like being strong armed. I hate the man. I'm for the little guy. You know, I want the little guy to take on the man, stick it to him, you know?
I know.
So
I feel you.
Well,
I also don't want him to get a lawsuit, you know, or the second letter.
And it's hard.
Here's the other thing I want to say. And this is an important distinction too. Your opinions, you can say whatever the heck you want. I didn't like the way it tasted. I didn't like the product, whatever it was you got. Say that all day long. But you can't say like, you know, I ate the food and it tasted as if there was, you know, sewage in the soup. Okay. You have a problem with that. All right. That starts getting into a fact that may have not been there. Are you really saying there was sewage in the soup? You know?
Gotcha. So, it's true. And, you know,
just cool your jets, you know? Don't worry.
You can tell in our partnership who keeps this, you know, our feet square on the ground and whatever keeps us grounded. But, you know, I would say it is hard because as a business owner, you're never going to completely satisfy all your customers, your patients, your clients. You know, we're not perfect in our law firm and accounting firm. And we've, you know, someone listening today says, well, Mark, I wasn't, you know, entirely pleased at the services I received. So as a business owner, you're 9 times out of 10, you're trying to do your best. And if you do, I liked what you said, there was an innocent mistake involved and the consumer wasn't happy, but do they need to tear them a new one? You know, I don't appreciate it when people of our, you know, clients that have used our firm embellish and kind of blow up, you know, give us a break. We're trying. Now, if a business owner is truly fraudulent or jerk and they deserve it, then stick to the facts and do it, you know.
Yeah, but exactly.
Yeah, it's tough. Good points. Yeah, good stuff. All right. Well, Matt, I will give that a 4.5 star.
4.5 star. Okay. Yeah, that's fair.
Maybe 5. It's a pretty good one. I like it.
It's kind of like if a movie that you liked, but you didn't like the ending. You're like, eh.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, your ending was good. I mean.
Okay. All right.
I just, you know. I
had you at the beginning. And then I kind of lost you.
Yeah. Yeah. You had me at hello. Renee Zegwiller, she's just awesome in that. I mean, Tom Cruise, it's the best. Jerry Maguire. Ladies, you know what I'm talking about. You just need a guy to be honest. Just come out. Just hello. I want you back. I love you. I'll do what it takes.
You had me at hello.
that's good. You had me at hello. You had me at legal tip. You had me at legal tip. Oh my gosh. Okay. All right. Well, we're going to get into our topic now. Now, Matt, can I kick it off? Okay. Let me tell you what the four topics are. The four sections of our show today. We've actually organized this, people. I know many of you realize we shoot from the hip sometimes, but we came in very organized today. So we're going to hit four topics in what order? I'm not sure. I'm going to let Matt choose. I'm going to just lay them out, Matt. Then you just, you two decide where we're going first. First is when it comes to student debt, what is the crisis? Should we really be and this may be number one anyway. We may need want to go into the set the stage, but
that's gotta be one.
Don't go into debt. Can I avoid going into debt? How bad is the problem? What is the current situation in America today when it comes to student debt? Let's kind of maybe paint paint the picture for everyone. Number two, should you really be paying for your kids' student debt? And if you are, what's the tax strategy? And I get that phone call all the time. I had one this week. I'm going to share that shortly. Number three, we want to talk about tax strategies for saving for school, maybe paying for school currently, or writing, or how to deduct the interest that you may be paying on student debt. You know, what are some tax strategies here? I've got a blog article on this. It's quite robust, and we're going to go through that. And then finally, how do you pay off your student debt the most quickly? Are there any options or strategies for debt forgiveness? What does that entail? I mean, each one of these topics could be a whole show. We get that. So we're going to scratch the surface, really, I think. But and I'm going to recommend you read this article of mine. It's going to be critical on the saving for school and writing it off and all that. But we're going to hit it. I think many of you are going to find there's something for everyone here. So, Matt, I guess topic one, the crisis.
Yeah, let's start with the crisis. Let me just say this. There is $1.5 trillion in student loan debt right now.
What? Really?
$1.5 trillion. Yeah.
Holy crap. You can't even get your head around
this
that.
This is $620 billion more in student loan debt than there is U.S. credit card debt.
Wow.
A lot of people think credit card debt's the problem. Oh, people with their credit cards. Nah. Student loan debt is
over double.
Yeah, almost double. Yep.
Wow. Now, you said something to me earlier today when we were crafting our show today about President Obama.
Yeah.
May you please pray tell.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys remember, but I really remember this. It kind of hit me when President Obama, you know, this president of the United States, former United States Senator, Harvard
law degree. Well, state senator. Was he a state senator or U.S. senator?
Well, he was U.S. senator. Yeah. He was a U.S. senator from the state of Illinois.
I'm embarrassed. I got to look that up because someone's going to be like, are you guys idiots? I'm already going to probably have
I'm not
email
an idiot.
By the time.
You are. I'm right. Yeah.
Okay, fine. Whatever. We're going to prove this right now. Okay, keep going. What did he say?
So he announced as president of the United States that he had just finished off paying his student loans.
Wow.
Now, he was someone that has gotten the highest office in the land serving as president of the United States. And he was elected and he had student loans. And it was only until he was president that he finally paid them off. So that's how many people this is affecting and how deep this goes is, even the president of the United States, man. Did you just fact check this, Mark?
I fact checked it. Let me clarify that we are both right. This is what a good husband does in a marriage anyway, is he will say we were both right. So he was first an Illinois state senator from 1997 to 2004, then served as the junior United States Senator from Illinois from 2005 to 2008 before running for president.
Because remember, he voted against the war in Iraq while in the Senate. Mm-hmm. Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Anyway,
Obama knowledge. But that's just a big fact. I think that was important. And I think a lot of people may feel bad. You know, they got student debt. But man, this is affecting everybody.
Yeah. I was just talking to a good friend of mine. This is a month or so ago, a plastic surgeon that has been out of practicing for almost 20 years now, 15 to 20 years. And he's still paying on student debt. And I was still taken a little back. Now we've got some recommendations here. I did not have the battle of student debt in my life. And I'll share a couple thoughts on my personal story maybe here in a moment. But this is a big deal. The article that kind of blew this up for us too was on in Wall Street Journal on the front page this last week. There was a Utah orthodontist had over $1 million in student loan debt. Now it started out as $600,000. He borrowed $600,000, but over the last 8 years, it has ballooned to over $1 million because of interest, and he wasn't making payments, and he's been trying to get out of it and fighting it. So it's kind of a rebel. Leave it to a dentist, orthodontist, to kind of be a rebel in the tax law world. You dentists know what I'm talking about. But then the Department of Education, because they have a record of all the student debt in America, said there's now over 101 people in America that have over $1 million balance on their student loan debt. 5 years ago, it was only 35 people. And sorry. 5 years ago, 14 people owed that much. Only 14 people 5 years ago owed $1 million. Now it's over 101 people. And the it goes on to talk about the average student debt. And it's just, it's brutal. So it really is a crisis. And so, mm-hmm. Matt, any other topics on that before we go to how to maybe stay out of this student debt?
No, I think everybody knows it's a crisis. You've heard so many, you know, people predict that the next looming crisis isn't the housing crisis. It is a student loan crisis, because so many of the millennial generation in particular is paying at the highest rates of tuition we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And they're getting out in the workforce. And this has been a reason they said there's been such a slowdown of millennials buying homes. They all got big student loan debts. They've got a mortgage before they even buy a house, but that mortgage just happens to be their student loan debt, you know? They've already got a mortgage payment right when they graduate. So congratulations, you have a degree. But I think that's all we need to say on the crisis. And obviously this is a big financial issue for the person incurring the debt, but also for the parents. And that's what I think is the next point, really, is to talk about how do you pay for it? You know, you may be trying to pay for it yourself. Maybe you're working and you're going to school at nights. I don't know. You're going back to school. But the traditional student entering out of high school, there's a lot going on there between parent and student and who's paying for it. What should you consider? I mean, Mark, what do you think? I know where you've got your opinions. I think we might have some differences of opinion, actually. But
well, yeah, we might. I think we're going to have to duke it out here. But I'll throw out – I've got 2 points I'll make briefly, and then we can beat those up. And I know, Matt, you've got a list of a few. I'm going to make 2 points. Live cheap, go small. Now, let me explain why. I talk to a lot of – I see and I meet with a lot of folks that are starting their first small business. They're trying to buy that home, and they have a student debt. And they'll even joke about it. I lived better when I was in college. And a lot of kids going to college get addicted or whatever to the student debt and are like, they're driving a nicer car, living in a better apartment. Then they get their first career job and they're having to make their student loan payment, and they live in a cheaper apartment and drive a cheaper car because they lived large when they were in college. So my first recommendation is live cheap when you're in college. Don't take that student debt and think this is the time to buy a sweet car.
Yeah. You know what I heard when I was in law school is, if you want to live like a lawyer when you're a law student, you'll live like a law student when you're a lawyer.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Duh. Yeah, crazy. Love it.
Now, it's not okay, free, man.
So that's number one. So for any of you that have kids going to college or you're trying to work through college, I'm going to repeat, if you live like a lawyer now while you're in college, you're going to live like a law student later when you're a lawyer. That was sweet advice, Matt. Matt Sorensen. Okay, let's just finish the show. I'm dropping the mic.
Over and out.
Okay. Number two, go small. People, your kid does not have to go to USC. They don't have to go to Pepperdine. They don't have to go to, you know, Harvard, Yale, whatever. Now, if your kid is a genius, they should be getting scholarships anyway. If your kid's a genius and wants to be a professor of an Ivy League, fine, buckle down and pay for the damn. Yeah. How are you going to pay off the student loan debt with that? Who needs these, you know, Division 1A, top of the line, top tier colleges so they can go out and get a job at the median income level of someone that graduated from the local state university? Folks, please do not get sucked into these huge universities. There's nothing wrong with going to community college for 2 years and transferring. Save some freaking money. Go small. Ask mm-hmm. me. All right. I don't know. Disagree?
Yeah.
Agree?
Well, I've gone through this with my own kids, and I think my oldest, who very good academically, had a full ride scholarship to University of Arizona, which is where she ended up going. And as a dad, man, you're like, this is great. You know, I want to support my kids going to college, but she really took care of herself. The tuition, you just have to pay.
You got lucky, man. You dodged a bullet.
I know. Dodged a major bullet. And, but it was a good decision for her. It worked for her. That's where she wanted to go in the end anyways. And it just worked out. Now, my other daughter's coming up, just took the SATs, like crushed the SATs, very good student. And as I'm looking at schools, one thing I'll know, and this is a good little strategy I picked up and I've talked to some other people, is if you're good enough to get into the Harvard, let's say, you're good enough to get a full academic scholarship at Georgetown. You know, if you're good enough to get a full academic scholarship at, or sorry, if you're good enough to get in at Georgetown, you're good enough to get a full academic scholarship at UCLA, or however these tiers go.
These tiers, you know? Right, yeah.
And so if you do have a kind of student, you know, that is, so, you know, kind of this elite student, I would say, in these top schools that are very pricey, if you go, which is one notch down,
you got to pay for it.
You're in the scholarship zone of you're not paying.
Yeah.
Or you're paying a very discounted rate.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think, a really important consideration. And the other thing is your student will do very well at that school. They'll be a star. They'll graduate summa cum laude or magna cum laude, or they'll be in the honors department. And that's another perk, I think, to going, so to speak, small is, you know, be the star, get the scholarship, get the high grades. I think that's a good consideration to go, because in the end, man, it's going to save you tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah. Okay. Now for some of you listening that have brilliant children, or you yourself are brilliant, you related to that. Now for the 98% of us like me that are thick heads that are not as smart as Matt Sorensen, let me throw out my third point, and it is titled Take Your Time. Now this again flies in the face of the Matt Sorensen story, which I'll allow you to share in a minute, but I have the mic, so shut the hell up. So here's my point. It took me, and I don't mind sharing this, it took me to get through law school, a master's program, and undergrad 10 years. It took me 10 years. Now I got a master's and law school, which right there is 4 years. Start doing the math in reverse. You're like, man, what took this guy so freaking long? Well, I owned a business while I went to school. I'd go to school at night. I would go to part-time. I was always registered to school. I never took time off because I knew if I took time off from school, I may not re-register. So I was always taking a class. But sometimes I just took one class that semester or that summer, and then I'd take three or four the next one. It took me a while to get through school. But guess what? My small business paid for school. When I sold my business, it paid for my law school. It paid a large part of it, I need to say. I think that people get into this mode where I got to get in and out in 3 or 4 years. And if you're brilliant and you've got a scholarship and you're like Matt Sorensen, who is, and I mean this in all fun and jest, because I think Matt's amazing. But if you're a prodigy and you can get through quickly, like Matt may share here shortly, I think it's great. But if you're having to pay for it yourself, or you're going to go into debt in these massive student loan debt, what's the hurry? What's the hurry? Just take your time, start a small business, have a day job, go to get your MBA at night. There's nothing wrong with that. We just recently had a paralegal in our program here at our office that went to law school at night for 4.5, 5 years. And we were so proud of her. It was amazing. And she would go to school every night. So I don't know, Matt, I think taking your time, there's nothing wrong with that. It's not a race, people. It's a marathon.
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's not a sprint. It's a marathon. They're both races.
Oh, yes. Damn it. See, this is why I didn't get a scholarship. Gosh darn it. Shut up, so, Richard.
Yeah. I mean,
we call those doctors.
Lots of people went to school for 10 years.
Yeah. We call those doctors, Richard. Okay. Anyway.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, as Mark said, my strategy, I was in crisis. I got married when I was 18 and was a teenage parent. And so I went through school like in 3 years, my undergrad, and then went right to law school. I had no time to waste, so to speak. So I was just, you know, pedal to the metal, get it done. But I think for most parents, though, as we're talking about this, obviously there's the federal financial aid process. And I was going to point out two important numbers on this. When you're applying for student aid, now this depends on how many kids you have. I'm just going to give you a guideline. if you make more than about 120 grand, you're not going to get like Pell grants. You're not going to get like the free federal aid type stuff. You may get loans, but you know, you're going to get loans, but you're not going to get like the free grants and stuff that you don't have to pay back. Now, the next criteria, and this is the student aid criteria in paying for education for that 300 of the private universities uses, the most widely used table on where they take someone's income, it's how many kids you have, stuff like that. But that caps out at about 425,000. So if you make more than 425,000, count on not getting any aid help from any private university if you end up going to a private school. But even below that, you know, for those of you in the, you know, they may think, oh, I don't get any federal aid. A lot of private schools will still give aid up to 400,000 of annual income. So you may obviously kind of phase out, so to speak, for any federal aid, but you can get private aid from the university where they will discount tuition or give grants or scholarships. So I thought those were important because I think a lot of people skip the FAFSA. This is the thing you have to fill out. A lot of business owners and or people that are like, well, I make a few hundred grand a year or a couple hundred grand a year. I'm not going to get anything. No, no, no. Still fill it out. Even if you're high income, still take the time to fill it out.
Yeah. And on that note, gosh, I knew the show was going to go long and maybe it's fine. Many of you commuters, you might have to take two bites of the apple on this show. Sometimes you catch our whole show on one drive time, but you might have to break this up. But I think this is important enough. We finish some of our major points for sure. And I just want to add to Matt's, so many people don't realize that the squeaky wheel gets the grease. It really does. Get in. If you know what school, or maybe two or three schools that you or your child wants to go to, get in there and start asking for help. Get into that financial aid office and start saying, what are my options? What are the scholarship options? And get started early. There are student, college application consultants that start when kids are sophomores or freshmen in high school. And the sooner you get involved in the program as to where you want your kids to go and get help and get support and start knocking on the door, filling out the forms, filling out the applications, it's a paperwork freaking nightmare, but you'd be shocked at how much money you can get. And I don't think people realize that.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's okay. The free money, man.
Yeah. Okay. Now let's go to some tax strategies here. Now I'm going to set the stage with the little phone call that I had earlier this week too, that kind of rocked my world. And this client may be listening and I didn't pull back any punches on the phone with them. And of course I'm not going to share their name or even where they're from, but I was talking to a couple and they're in their 50s approximately. And we're on the phone and we're talking about their wealth building strategy. They've got one rental property. They're starting a little small business. They're trying to create some extra income. They want to create some retirement. I asked them, what do you have in an IRA? What do you have in a 401k? Nothing to speak of, hardly anything at all, if nothing at all. I know they didn't have IRAs. There may have been something, a little something, an old 401k. And they had maybe a couple hundred thousand of equity in their home. And I know they were doing a HELOC to help get their business started. And then I asked, this is when the phone call just took a fateful twist. I said, so with the profits from this, are we going to fund an IRA, 401k? Are we going to buy more rentals? What are we going to do to build that wealth? So 10 years from now, you're not, freaking out because they're staring down the barrel here at no retirement plan whatsoever in their early 50s. And some of you listening here, you know what I'm talking about. It keeps you awake at night. I'm not kidding. So, they said, well, Mark, we've got $140,000 of debt. And I go, really? Oh, credit card debt? You didn't mention a HELOC. What's this $140,000? Well, it's our kid's student debt from college, and we promised to pay it off for him. And I was like, I seriously was dumbfounded on the phone for a minute. I said, what? We're building this business in your 50s to pay off your kid's student debt? They said, well, that's what we agreed to do. We wanted to help them get through college. And I didn't even go down the path of what did they graduate in? Are they making money? Or da, da, da. They said, that's what we're going to do. And I said, okay, there goes any major tax strategies on saving the money for retirement or buying another rental. Let's work down that debt. And then the question came, how can I take the tax write-off to help with that? And I'll give that here in 2 seconds. But Matt, it was really disturbing. And I know you have calls like that mm-hmm. where we have clients drain their 401k to pay off their kids' student debt. I'm like, yeah. What?
Yeah. If you're at the financial position where you can't kind of cut the check to pay for your kids right then. If you've got to go into debt yourself for your child and you're taking that responsibility, that is that you are not serious. Financially ready to be paying for your kids to go to school. A lot of people want to give that to their kids. They may not have that themselves, and it's something they want to give to their kids. Well, maybe you co-sign on the loan, but it's not your loan. It's still the kid's loan, and you try to help them do it as cheaply as possible, because remember, your butt's on the line and your retirement's on the line too.
Yeah.
But definitely do not take that burden. I think that is that's just something you're not ready. You can't financially gift, and you got to take care of yourself first.
Yeah.
Because if you've got that student loan debt that you've agreed to pay, and then you're in your 60s or your 70s and you can't work, yeah. Now your kid's – they're going to take care of you. I don't know.
Yeah. Let me
a weird dynamic.
It is. It's crazy. Let me quote the Delta stewardess from last weekend on my flight back from Vegas. In the case of an emergency, take the oxygen mask and put it on yourself first to make sure you're okay. Then you can help your child sitting next to you. And that goes nice. The same for debt. Take care of yourself first and your retirement and your financial wherewithal. Then you can strap on, an extra burden of helping your children once you have the wherewithal.
I like that. God, now we end the show.
Okay. Now boom. Boom. This show, this is going to whole new levels. This is going to hit the, New York Times bestselling.
That's for so much financial planning for your kids. And this is the biggest expense, I think, that a lot of parents will help their kids with or co-sign on a loan for or pay for, man, that's such good advice. I love that.
Well, I just gave it what do you call it? An example of what your point was. I don't know. There's a term for it. If I got a scholarship in college, I would have known what to call that. An analogy. Metaphor. It was a metaphor. Was it a metaphor? I don't know. I'm going to get an email from an English teacher out there saying, you're an idiot, Mark. Here's what you should have said. Okay. Now here's this. Okay. Tax strategies. If you are in that situation and you said you're going to do it and you're going to help your kids through college, currently going to college or afterwards, help them with their student debt. Guess what? Your kids just became a member of your board of directors. They're involved in your business. They're on your board of advisors for your LLC. Your LLC operating agreement, yes, not that one sheet of paper you got at LegalZoom, but your legitimate LLC documents that you have my paralegals prep for you. You get a legit entity with your kids on the board, and they're going to get a gift at Christmas called a 1099. They're going to love it. They're going to run to the Christmas tree, rip open that present, and in there or in their Christmas stocking, there's going to be a little 1099 that says, hey, I may have paid for your student debt, but I'm not paying the taxes on it, you bozo. And so you go. You're going to pay taxes on the money I paid for your college tuition. And so my kids now, I've got 3 kids in college, and they help me out in my business. They all provide some level of service. Some I would like to do more than others. But they are helping, and they are very cost conscientious. Every one of them is going to a state school with in-state tuition, either part-time or even to a community college. I did not care if they went to an Ivy League. And they took in my... walked in my footsteps, and they're not, brainiacs. We're just good with people. We're street smart. We're street smart, intuitively street smart. Anyway, and so when I help my kids with their tuition or housing or whatever I offer to do, and it varies from year to year and child to child, they get a 1099. Those payments come out of my company. So one of the best tax strategies, again, for a child that you're helping in college or afterwards pay down debt, you should be paying them through your business, and they should be helping you in your business. And I'll have an intervention with them on the phone if I need to. So,
yeah, I love that. That's what I do for my daughter in college. I 1099 her for my S Corp. And it's funny, I helped her do her tax return. In fact, I use TaxSlayer, by the way. And I did her return on TaxSlayer. She got back a refund of like $600. And she has her own small business in addition to this income that she makes some money from also. But it was just cool, and it was good to for her to have a tax return, show some income. I got to expense it. She's at a zero income tax rate. It was a big win-win. So obviously, if I'm sending her $10,000, let's say, I got a $10,000 expense. If you're in, let's say, a one-third tax bracket, that saves you $3,300 that they're not going to have to really pick up and pay some income. Now, there's some, it's a little bit of self-employment tax that comes up, but it was pretty nominal, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So one thing I want to point out, too, is there are tax credits that are available, of course. There's the American Opportunity and Lifetime Learning. But these phase out. So if you're, you know, I think 180 is the max you can make on the American Opportunity for joint filers and still get the credit, or that's when it phases out. You got to be under that. And 132 for married filers on the Lifetime Learning credit. So if you're below those income levels, or, you know, you're below 100, let's say, joint filer, or kind of in the low hundreds, you'd probably be able to get to use these credits, and those would be valuable. If you're over that, then you definitely want to consider this 1099 strategy. That's going to probably be much more bang for your buck and better.
Yeah, yeah.
Let them pay the expense.
Totally. And Matt, I love that you coupled these two strategies together, because here's why it's cool, people. When you 1099 your kids, are you paying their tuition? You're not. You wouldn't even be these credits wouldn't even be available to you. You wouldn't qualify. That was the word I was looking for. You wouldn't qualify for these credits because you didn't pay the tuition. But when you 1099 your children, then your children are paying their own tuition and they qualify for the credit. And they are not hitting these income limits. So when Matt sits down to do Brooke's tax return, he's going to take advantage of the American Opportunity credit, which is for your undergrad student. She's going to get the credit. That's why she's getting refunds, people. So rather than Matt pay taxes and then give his kids money, 1099 him and let him take the credit, and they're getting a refund that he could even say, give me back that $600, damn it, that's mine, you know, and or whatever, you know. So I just, so powerful. So if you can't qualify to the credit, that's where that 1099 can allow them to qualify as well.
Love it.
So powerful. Okay. A couple other things to keep in mind before we get to those that are in student debt dramatically right now, yourselves, just a couple other thoughts is, as you're starting to save for college, let's go back to some of you now that have younger children again. We're all over the board here. Like you said, this is a huge topic. I just wanted to hit the 529 plan and the Coverdell IRA. I think we need to get those on the table. So for any of you that have children that are even in high school, I've got a daughter that's 16, coming up on 16. She's driving now, 15 and a half. Yes, in Idaho at 15 and a half, she's driving and carrying a gun. So, I mean, it's, I don't know what I'm more worried about. I'm glad she's armed. But driving. So
she's got a license to drive and to kill.
Yeah, so, yeah, it's Lord of the Flies out here in Idaho. It's exciting. So, anyway, so here's the thing, though. I can set up a Coverdell IRA for her. It's a $2,000 contribution, and she can self-direct it. She can invest that $2,000 whatever she wants, and it grows tax-free and comes out cash tax-free for college. We could do a 529. I am not a big fan of the 529 plan because you don't get to self-direct it. You don't get to really invest it. There are state-sponsored plans that are quite restrictive. But if you've got a grandparent that wants to throw you some money, take it. Throw it in a 529. That's not going to hurt you. But I think you've got better ways to use your own money to even fund a Roth IRA for your kids, because those contributions to the Roth can be earning money, and then those contributions can come out tax-free for college. So between Roths and Coverdells and 529s, you've got kind of a triple 1-2-3 punch that you can use for saving for college. So think about that for those with younger children.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned the Roth IRA. I think that's one a lot of people forget. Many people have thought of the Coverdell. Frankly, for anyone that's doing a Coverdell, if you're good at planning and you're making the plan, you're doing a Coverdell, you should also be doing a Roth for those kids. Yeah. Now, the Roth requires they need to have some income. The Coverdell, you know, probably the most common strategy for the Coverdell is you gift the kids the money and the kid makes the contribution.
Yep.
They don't have to have earned income to make a Coverdell contribution. So, but the Roth IRA, they're going to actually have some earned income. So this is where, again, if they're under 18, get them involved in the family business. Yep. This goes on the paying your kids strategy we talk about. We've got separate radio shows just about that. Mark's got a lot of blog articles on that, chapter in his book. Yeah. But if you're paying them, drop it into a Roth IRA form. You can pull that money right back out if you need it to pay for college, or really to pay for anything. And frankly, it doesn't have to be to pay for college, but there's no tax, no penalty for pulling out the contributions you put in.
Yeah. No, I love it. Now, in summary here on this point, then we'll get to our last subtopic here of the day. On our newsletter, every week, we post what the show was recorded for the week. And so for those of you that get to the newsletter this week, on Tuesday next week, that would be June 6th, you'll get a newsletter article. June 4th, 5th, 6th, whatever, next Tuesday. What is it next week, Matt? Today's the 1st, so that'd be 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, June 5th. So on Tuesday next week, you'll get the newsletter. In that announcement for the radio show, I will put a link into that description for this article. So this is a 4-page article on how to write off college expenses, a little bit more about education trusts, prepaid tuition plans, the educational IRA, the 529, these two credits we talked about, a lot of resources there. So I will put a link to this article in there. And number two, if any of you want to email Matt or myself, and I'll make it easy, just email me. I'll tell my assistant to look for it. So email mark@kkoslawyers.com. Mark, M-A-R-K, at K-K-O-S, as in Sam, or as in Sorensen, kkoslawyers, L-A-W-Y-E-R-S.com. Send me an email and say, Coverdell IRA, in the subject line. Help me out. Where do I set up a Coverdell? We'll send you a link of where to set up a self-directed Coverdell IRA and what the rules are, and a link to a couple videos on that. So we've got plenty of resources. So if you'll email me, I'll send you that. Also look in the newsletter for this blog article. Mm-hmm. So Matt, what can people do? You can write off the interest, I guess, on your student loan. Go ahead and hit that.
Yeah. Now the student loan interest you pay, you know, you'll get a student, you know, as you know, if you're paying this or you're getting to pay, you're going to get a little interest statement from your student loan servicer saying, here's how much student loan interest you paid for the year. Now this has some pretty fast phase outs though. This is a downer to this. Yeah. For those single, 80,000, you're totally phased out. Married, 160,000. So once you hit those income limits, you're not writing off that student loan interest anymore. And for, I think a lot of people, and I just remember me when I phased out on this, I was like, I was so pissed about it. I don't know why, but paying student loans is just like a hard thing for me. And it was just like, I don't know why. It was like the one bill to pay. I was just like, ugh, I hate that I have to pay this. But the interest, once you phase out on it, I mean, Mark has, I think you have a little bit of a strategy here in your article, but you ain't getting the benefit of that anymore. And I think this is really sad because you see that example of the dentist with the million dollar student loan package. Well, he's phased out on it. Oh, yeah. He's got a crushing debt burden, and he cannot live like, you know, someone that owes $1 million. I mean, you know, he can't live the high life, he phases out for income purposes, so he can't take the student loan interest deduction.
Yeah, it's crazy. And now here's something, just a takeaway. And I think this is interesting if some of you have already read into this. And this is where I feel like I've been self-deprecating all day talking about how dumb I am compared to Matt Sorensen. But yeah, I've got some smarts here, folks. What I'm good for is I can really kind of dissect situations and summarize them and make them palatable to the average person. And I don't know, I feel like I'm an insightful guy, whatever. So got to pat myself on the back, man. I'm feeling inferior today with the amazing Matt Sorensen. But but let me throw this out.
You're going to ask me for something after the show, right?
Yeah,
I am. Ask.
Can I borrow some money, Matt?
I don't know where this is going.
Yeah. So here's what's insightful, I think. If you look at Matt's story, he had student debt, but he got done with school in 5 years. 5 to 6 years, he was done.
6 years, yeah.
Six years. 6 years with a law degree.
3 years law school.
Yeah, undergrad and law school in 6 years. It almost took me twice that, but I had no student debt. So you have to kind of say to yourself, okay, so I can burn through school quickly, maybe have some student debt, or I can take my time, have a part-time job or a full-time job and work through school and take twice as long, but have no student debt. And some may argue, well, Matt got out there and started earning money sooner at a higher level. It took you longer, Mark, but you didn't have debt. And I think it's fine either way. Here's the X factor, getting into too much student debt. And so Matt was able to keep his, and I'm speaking on behalf of Matt because I know he said it before, he kept his student debt within check. He still had student debt, but it wasn't off the chart. And so burning through school, it worked out. And it worked out for me where it took me longer to get through school, but I didn't have student debt. And so I don't want to say student debt is bad. It could be the difference maker in some of you getting through school or getting to school at all. But yeah. you've got to keep it in check. Live lean.
Yeah.
Go small. Take your time.
Yeah. And I think just a couple other considerations. I know we're all over the map here, but what are you going to school for?
Mm.
I think a lot of people think, well, you turn 18, you go to college, you know, and a lot of parents, you know, they want to see their kids going off to college. Not every kid's made for that. That might not be right for your kid. Does every kid need to go to college? No. And what degree are they getting? For my kids, they know if they want me to help them in college, they just can't get any old college degree. I need to know what their plan is. Why are you getting this degree? What's your major? And it better be something that you're going to be able to get a job for coming out of college. Otherwise, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I'm paying, you know, for you to get a philosophy degree that is going to make you totally not employable. And you basically had 4 years having fun learning philosophy. Well, crap, I'd want to take 4 years off and learn philosophy. But is that something that's going to help me get a job and springboard my life at a young age? No.
Yeah, excellent.
As much as I like philosophy.
No, this is so cool. And this Wall Street Journal article, for those that, again, want to search for it, it was on May 26th, Wall Street Journal, and you can, you know, put in there student loan debt, and you'll find the article. But here's what was interesting. The most expensive student debt industry or profession was dentistry. Biggest student debt load was carried by dentists. Number two was lawyers, and number three was doctors. What was interesting, though, is they go through this table, and it's quite – I don't want to go through it in too much in depth because we could get sucked into it. But what was interesting, it was more expensive to get through as a veterinarian more than law school. Veterinarians ended up with more student debt than law. Mm. It was more expensive for veterinarian school than law school. But more lawyers ended up in debt. So interesting, right? So let me repeat that. Veterinarian school is more expensive than law school, but more lawyers ended up in debt than veterinarians. Maybe veterinarians are a little more frugal while going through school. I don't know.
I think so.
Law students live in large. So. But the question begs here is, what is then the average income and median income of these different professions too? Does the average lawyer make more than the average veterinarian and vice versa and all that? And so you've got to compare this. You know, I've talked about it for years that in some states, the average realtor makes more than the average lawyer. And look at the cost of entry to become a realtor. So it's interesting. Not everybody has to go be a professional to be financially successful. Some enjoy it. Some love education, but keep it in check. Okay, Matt, getting out of debt. Anything else on that? I know you had a couple thoughts.
No, yeah, you want to hit this last topic of the what to do when you got the debt. When we just talked about the student loan interest and paying it off. But lastly, the one other thing I was going to say is this is a conversation I had with a friend. Just Mark and I were talking about this and Obama finally paying off his student loans. And just talking to a friend that just has crushing student loan debt and is trying to negotiate it. It's virtually impossible to bankrupt student loan debt. So when you sign on for student loan debt, you know, if you really hit a roadblock and you cannot pay off like a credit card, you know, or you're in financial stress situation, yeah, and you can bankrupt credit cards. Bankrupting a student loan debt is like that is like hitting the full court shot, you know. Bankrupting a credit card debt is like a layup. So if you want to bankrupt your student loan debts, you got a long road ahead, and you've got to have really special circumstances to get that bankrupted. So just know these type of loans, you don't have that bankruptcy kind of backdoor to get back out of it. So just keep that in mind. It's sticking with you forever.
Yeah, it's tough. And I would say this, there are a lot of resources for those that have large student debts. There's federal programs and nonprofits that can help you structure payment programs, do some debt consolidating. Do not feel all is lost. Get on the web. We tried to recruit a couple of experts to be on the show today, and we couldn't get them in time to talk about debt consolidation, student debt pay down, student debt forgiveness. I had a client the other day. She was in dentistry. She had over $160,000 in student debt, and she was not getting There was no end in sight. Her career path was not allowing her to pay it off. This is about a year ago when me and Randy Lubke, co-author of my recent book, we worked with her on this. She ended up signing up with a federal program where for 10 years she worked for a lower wage for a nonprofit in dentistry. And at the end of her 10 years, her student debt was forgiven. And some of those programs, the student debt is forgiven, no questions asked. Other times that student debt is forgiven and you still have to pay the taxes on the debt forgiveness. And so you may get out of the debt, but who's going to pay the tax on that? And that can be a nightmare. So, but there are options. Get out there. Don't give up. Again, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. If you are scrapping to try to figure out how I could get out of this debt as fast as possible, you're going to find some solutions. Albeit I'm not perfect.
Yeah, well, man, this is a sobering topic. We know it's a big crisis. Hopefully there are some tips and strategies in there, just how to handle it on your taxes, pay for it, make prudent decisions on college. I mean, this is turning into one of the biggest expenses that Americans face. But let us know your thoughts, or if you have any ideas, of course, send them our way. You can always find out more about the show. Leave us comments. Find us on social media at refreshyourwealth.com. Also, make sure you sign up for the newsletter so you get announcements about upcoming shows. And as always, please, if you like this show, go to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you find the podcast and give us a 5-star review. We really appreciate that. It helps other people find the show.
Thank you, everyone. We'll see you next week for another episode of Refresh Your Wealth.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.